History Committee will please come to order. It is now 8:05 on Thursday, April 14th. We're in the Grunberg Room. The members present are Representative Millett, Representative Christ Tompkins, Representative Klayman, my vice chair, Representative Keller, and I am Chair Ledoux. Thank you, Christy, for recording for us today, and for another Christy, for the Juno LIO for teleconferencing support. On the agenda this morning, we have amendments for SB 91. And so we have in front of us 18 amendments to consider today. So with that, I'm going to move amendment number one.
I'll object, Madam Chair, for purposes of explanation.
All right. And I believe Jordan is here to explain amendment number one. And I'll note that Representative Foster has joined us. Welcome.
Madam Chair, for the record, Jordan Schilling, staff to Senator Coghill. This first amendment is just a large technical amendment. It might be best if the court system, the public defenders, and Department of Law who are in the room walk through the various changes that affect their agencies.
All right. And Representative Lynn has joined us. Welcome. Ms. Mead?
Casey, I think, is first. Casey will be the first if we want to go through them in this order.
Good morning.
Good morning. For the record, this is Nancy Mead, General Counsel for the Alaska Court System. I actually just received the amendment, and I think what this amendment does is it incorporates the technical amendments from the three entities who worked on it.
Ms. Mead, if you'd like to look at that a little bit more, if you've just received it, I might be able to call Quinlan Steiner, the PD, and I think we've got Casey Schroeder here from the court system, and that gives you a little bit more time that you can look it over.
I would appreciate that. Thank you.
All right.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to defer to Tracy Wallenberg, the Deputy Public
Defender. Okay, do you want to state your name for the record?
Sorry, this is Quinlan Steiner. I'm the Public Defender for the State of Alaska. I'm going to defer to Tracy Wallenberg for the technical amendments.
All right, that's good. Tracy, you want to join us?
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. Tracy Wallenberg, Deputy Public Defender for the Alaska Public Defender Agency. As Ms. Mead stated, this is a big technical amendment incorporating a lot of the technical changes that were made in the Senate bill and carrying them over to this bill. It was a collaborative effort, so these changes were suggested, you know, both by the Public Defender Agency, the Department of Law, and the court system. If it's the committee's pleasure, I can walk through some of the changes. I don't know that they're necessarily assigned to an entity, but I can sort of pick the ones that I think primarily came from the public defender.
I think that would be a good idea. Representative Keller?
Madam Chair, if you think it's a good idea, that's great. But I just wanted to call attention to the fact that we have a great summary here, and some of the technical amendments will be kind of mind-numbing, I think. The one I'm looking at is in Bill Section 55. In the sub-paragraph K on line 7 after the word insert, hearing, insert comma for or if the bail is being set in connection with petition to revoke. So there's a lot of punctuation things and whatever. I mean, we can go through them item by item, but we do have a good summary. So
what I would suggest is if there are any technical amendments that maybe aren't quite so technical and maybe have any substantive characteristics that you point them out to us.
Sure, Madam Chair. I might just, as I go along, take a second to make that determination. Let me just start with the first one. This adds back into the citation provision a line that had been previously taken out, which gives the contacting officer discretion to arrest if the person is a danger to others. That would allow a police officer to arrest someone. Previously, there was an exception for arresting someone if the crime was one involving harm to persons or property. This would give the officer discretion to arrest if it's not one of those types of crimes, but the officer still makes a determination that the person presents a danger. And along with that, it would give officer discretion to arrest for disorderly conduct, which can range from making unreasonably loud noise to failing to observe an officer's request to disperse. The change that Representative Keller just referenced would allow, and that's Section 55, Line 7, would allow, would just make clear how a judicial officer should set bail on a petition to revoke probation. Because there had been a rewrite of the bail statute tied to specific offenses and risk levels, it was a little bit unclear exactly how the judge should set bail if you were brought in on a petition to revoke probation, weren't necessarily charged with a new offense. So this just makes it clear that, adding this just makes it clear that under those circumstances, the judge should set the least restrictive condition or conditions that are reasonably necessary to ensure appearance and safety. I'll move now. I don't know how this is easiest to do. Madam Chair, is it easiest to work off the amendment or the spreadsheet that the committee has?
However you feel the most comfortable.
Madam Chair, I'm finding it pretty easy to follow the spreadsheet.
The spreadsheet.
That's probably the easiest path.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so on page 2, section 80. Previously excluded from the definition of technical violation for probation violation was the notion that the conduct resulted from an arrest for new criminal conduct. This change makes it clear that you don't necessarily have to be arrested and charged with a new crime. It's enough to take it out of the technical violation status if the conduct that you've engaged in constitutes new criminal conduct. And again, Madam Chair, I'm just sort of skipping over the ones that I think are purely technical. Page 3, section 116. This looks like a big change in the bill, so I just want to explain it, although it's really a drafting error. This inserted into the pretrial services provision a whole rewrite of the recommendations that the pretrial services officer is to make to the court. That was drafted in an earlier version of the Senate bill, but never inserted into the Senate bill, and it was inadvertently put in this bill. This just reverts it back to version H, which is comports with the recommendations.
Thank you.
Page 5, section 144. This is a similar change to the one I just discussed with regards to technical probation violations. This would make a similar change in the parole statute, not making the exclusion from technical violations for new criminal conduct contingent on arrest. And I'd be happy to answer any other questions. I sort of picked the ones that I thought had some substantive component and others that sort of don't have my name on them. But I'd be happy to answer any questions about the ones that don't have my name on them or because I'm familiar with them or any others.
Thank you. Do we have any questions? All right. Thank you very much. So do we have, is Casey here from the Department of Law? Is anybody here from Yes, Casey's here. Good morning.
Madam Chair, this is Casey Schroeder with the Assistant Attorney General for the Department of Law, and unfortunately, I don't have a copy of the spreadsheet, so if I could, thank you. So are you just wanting me to run through the ones?
Yes.
With my name by them?
Yes.
Okay.
Through the chair, Casey, we're actually not asking for every single one,
okay.
Just the ones that you think are significant.
Okay.
A lot of these that say technical on it, for clarity, we figure that out without an explanation.
And anything, Casey, that has that a more substantive component.
Okay. Madam Chair, so the first one that has something somewhat of a substantive component would be the second one down.
At ease. If you could mention the entire code section so that we can follow along that way.
Okay. So once again, this is Casey Schroeder, Assistant Attorney General with the Department of Law. So on your spreadsheet, it would be the second one down. It would be 1225-180. And it just adds disorderly conduct as one of the reasons that someone can be arrested. So if someone's on a premises and they're refusing to leave, that is actually disorderly conduct, and so that would be a reason that they could be arrested instead of just cited.
Thank you.
And then the next one would be on the second page of the spreadsheet. It would be 1255-090. And that change just makes sure that the person is in compliance with all conditions of probation for all of the cases that they are on probation for. So they wouldn't be eligible for early termination unless they're fully in compliance with all the conditions for all of the cases, because we have some defendants that have multiple cases and multiple probation conditions. So Madam Chair, just one moment. I thought there was one other one I wanted to mention, but I'm just looking for it. There it is. The next one would be under Section 121, so it's later on in the bill. It's 3316089.
And what page are we on?
That would be
fourth page.
Yes, Madam Chair, fourth. This is the eligibility for administrative parole, and it references that the person who potentially is eligible has to be in compliance with the case plan, and it references the case plan under 3330118, and that the phrasing of that particular section of statute says that they need to participate in programming. So there was a question about whether or not it was intended that they just be participating or if they actually have completed the programming. So language is added there to ensure that it's clear that the person has to have actually completed the programming and not just be participating.
Thank you.
And those were all the ones that I think were substantive. The rest of them were pretty technical.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, and again, for the record, this is Nancy Mead, General Counsel for the court system. Really, the only one not hyper-technical entry on your spreadsheet would be on page 1 at the bottom to Bill Section 55. The statute is AS 1230-011, in subsection 14, these are the bail conditions that a judge may impose. So after receiving the recommendation from the pretrial office, the judge has a list of things he or she can make as conditions when releasing the person. And this is the one that refers to the 24/7 program. And this modified the language to make it consistent with the other statutes that say specifically if the crime is a is one under Title IV, in other words, alcohol-related or DUI-related, you can be told to go to 24/7 as a bail condition. And similarly, for drug crimes, you can be told to go to 24/7 as a bail condition. So this this made that same thing available in the generalized bail statute. So now the judge can send anyone with an alcohol or drug-related offense to 24/7 in appropriate cases. Other than that, the changes in here that the court had requested are really just clarifying and word changes that are, I would believe, very non-controversial.
Thank you. Questions? All right. Thank you. You very much. So any further comments about or questions about Amendment Number 1?
Madam Chair, I'll remove my objection, if not.
Hearing no further objections, Amendment Number 1 is adopted. Let's move to Amendment Number 2.
Madam Chair, I would move Amendment Number 2.
And I will object for purposes of discussion.
Madam Chair, this this amendment was to align the House version of the bill with the Senate version of the bill and add it and make it so that the weight that would apply would be a 2.5 gram weight, and also in add in the concept that the weight is by aggregate weight rather than the specific weight of the controlled substance. And that, for according to the commission, that using the aggregate weight was important for purposes of actually being able to weigh the substance. Many times controlled substances that have mixes, if you're trying to figure out how much is cocaine and how much is some other agent, becomes almost impossible for law enforcement to essentially do their enforcement duties.
So just for the public, I want to clarify that. The weight that you're talking about is the weight of a controlled substance.
The weight of the substance that they that is seized.
Thank you. Representative Keller?
Yeah. Again, just for the record, to make it easy if someone's following elsewhere, this is in the bill, page 17, lines 16 to 20, page 22, lines 7 to 9. I'd give the section, but I don't have it. But thank you.
So any other... Does anybody else have any questions or comments about Amendment Number 2? So I will remove my objection to Amendment Number 2. Amendment Number 2 is adopted. We then go to Amendment Number 3. I will move Amendment Number 3.
Object for discussion.
And I believe Jordan is here to explain Amendment Number 3.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Jordan Schilling, staff to Senator Coghill. Amendment Number 3 is X.7, and it simply applies the two-year misdemeanor probation limit to all assault fours, domestic violence-related assault four and regular assault four, rather than all crimes involving domestic violence.
Questions?
Yeah. What's the original statute? What do we have in statute now, Jordan?
Through the chair, Representative Millett, currently in statute there are kind of two tiers of limits on probation term lengths. There's 25 years for a felony sex offense and 10 years for all other crimes, is my understanding. So the commission recommended creating more tiers to account for the different seriousness of offenses. They suggested a five-tiered system. And so this closely comports with the commission's recommendations. It deviates a little bit, but it's fairly close.
You look like you want to ask a question or make a comment, Representative Bellet.
Madam Chair, can we hold this amendment till the end? I need to look at something.
Sure. So amendment number three.
Yes.
We're going to put amendment number three aside. Or rather, amendment number four aside.
No, that was three. We're on three.
We're putting amendment number three aside. Okay, let's go to amendment number four.
Madam Chair, I move amendment number four.
Okay, and I'm going to object for purposes of discussion. And Jordan?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Amendment number four.
Jordan, each time I think you need to identify yourself.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Jordan Schilling, staff to Senator Coghill. Amendment number four is X.8. This amendment would exclude failing to complete batterer's intervention programming from the definition of technical violation for the purposes of the policy that caps the length of stay for a technical violation.
Questions? Comments? Do you... I will remove my objection. Mm-hmm. Okay, next we have amendment number four is adopted.
Madam Chair, I would move amendment number five.
All right, I'm going to object for purposes of discussion.
Madam Chair, amendment five does two things. The first is consistent with the discussions we had in this committee. We will increase the mandatory minimum sentence for murder one from 20 years to 30 years, and that's consistent with the commission's view that that increase won't have any impact on the commission goals. And then the second thing is in murder two cases where there's multiple victims, it would give the judge the discretion to, in terms of applying the mandatory minimum, if there was more than one person killed, the judge would have the ability to stack the mandatory minimum so that the actual total mandatory minimum would be less than so now with murder two, the mandatory minimum is 10 years, and if two people were killed, the judge would have the discretion to, for the second victim, have only 25% of the mandatory minimum be consecutive. So the mandatory minimum in that instance would be 12 and a half years. The judge would certainly still have discretion to sentence up to the maximum amount, but this would give in essentially very, very rare cases in which the defendant had unusual prospects for rehabilitation, the judge would have some flexibility in stacking.
Madam Chair.
Representative Mellett.
It's a good compromise.
Again?
It's a good compromise from going from all murder to, which we had discussed, I think, in committee quite at length, and we're a little high-centered on. So I think this is a good way to...
Thank you.
So I will remove my objection to amendment number five, and amendment number five is adopted. We'll go to amendment number six.
Madam Chair.
Representative Lynn.
I would move amendment number six.
And I'm going to object for purposes of discussion.
Amendment number six it's a good thing, adds the Office of Victims' Rights to the list of agencies to be consulted by the Department of Corrections in developing a pretrial release recommendation and regulations.
Anybody have any questions or comments about this amendment? I'm going to remove my objection to amendment number six, so amendment number six is adopted.
Thank you.
We'll now move to amendment number seven, And I will move amendment number 7.
And I'll object for discussion.
And Mr. Schilling, please identify yourself and then explain amendment number 7.
Madam Chair, Jordan Schilling, staff to Senator Coghill. Amendment number 7 is X-19. This amendment mirrors an amendment adopted by the Senate Finance Committee that excludes unclassified sex offenders from discretionary parole eligibility and moves the point at which the remaining sex offenders that would fall under the policy become eligible from the one-third point in their sentence to the one-half point in their sentence.
Do we have any questions or comments about amendment number 7? Then I will remove my objection.
I'll remove my objection.
Thank you, Representative Keller. With that objection being removed, amendment number 7 is adopted. We are next on amendment number 8. I am going to move amendment number 8.
I'll object for purposes of explanation.
And what amendment number 8 does, and we're probably going to consider this and maybe hold it, because I suspect there may be a little bit of controversy on amendment number 8. It prohibits the court from awarding pretrial credit for time spent on non-DOC electric monitoring. We heard quite a bit of testimony about that the other day. I guess I believe that to be in charge of monitoring, that's one of those essential governmental functions which the government should be doing. Does DOC have any comments about this?
From my understanding, what this would do is, so if you're with a private company, you don't get time served, but if you're under DOC monitoring, you get time served.
Yes.
So you're creating two different classes of electronic monitoring through this. And
well, I think in reality, Representative Mellett, the way it will work is that DOC is going to be in charge of everything.
And Madam Chair, I think one of the other features, because I had talked a little bit with the department, but we may get more from corrections on this. My understanding is also that the department would have the ability to contract out people to do the service for it, but they would still be within the corrections purview. So it wouldn't, because we've heard complaints about some of the electronic monitoring companies that have been less than steady in their supervision of people that are out on electronic monitoring, whereas if the Department of Corrections has a contractor doing that work for it, that those reports would still come back to Corrections when something happens.
Correct.
Madam Chair?
Yes, go ahead.
Question that, you know, is directed at the court, and I was wondering if Nancy Mead would be interested or has a comment on this amendment.
And thank you for the record. This is Nancy Mead from the court system. I believe this would be a policy call for the committee. The court would give the credit, depending on whatever you decide, ought to be the policy. My understanding is under the bill, pretrial services would be in charge of electronically monitoring the higher risk defendants who are released pretrial, and there would be no dispute apparently that those people would get credit for that time that they're spent on EM pretrial with DOC oversight. And then the question is, when and if the court still releases people pretrial under the system it's using now, kind of like professional third-party custodians, where the individual hires their own person, a private company, to do it, and then DOC is not administering or being in charge of those people. That's the question for you. And the court would be neutral on that. Whatever call you make in the bill is what we could do. So I don't know if I can be any more help than that.
Thank you, Ms. Mead. You know, I'm going to set this amendment aside until we finish up the other amendments.
Thank you.
So the next amendment is amendment number 9. I move amendment number 9.
And I'll object for purposes of explanation.
And again, Mr. Shelley?
Madam Chair, Jordan Schilling, staff to Senator Coghill. Amendment number 9 is X-14, and this requires this mirrors an amendment adopted by the Senate Judiciary Committee that requires that the Department of Health and Social Services, when choosing to contract with a vendor to administer the 24/7 sobriety program, must contract out in a competitive manner through a competitive procurement process.
Any questions? You still maintain yours?
No, I'll remove my objection, Madam Chair.
All right, that objection being removed, amendment number 9 is adopted. Next amendment is amendment number 10. I move amendment number 10.
And I'll object for purposes of explanation.
Mr. Schilling.
For the record, Madam Chair, Jordan Schilling, staff to Senator Coghill. This amendment mirrors an amendment adopted by, I believe, the Senate Judiciary Committee. Currently in the bill, sex offenders that have committed a felony sex offense are excluded from the administrative parole provision. This amendment deletes sexual felony and in its place inserts sex offense, which would now mean that misdemeanor sex offenders would similarly not be eligible for administrative parole. This reduces the number of people that would be eligible by including misdemeanors in that.
Madam Chair, I'd like to remove my objection, but I would also like to understand the impact of this as far in terms of both safety and the implication on filling beds at the correction center is... I guess I would ask can we set this one aside?
Yes.
I would like to look at it a little further.
Let's set this one aside. All right. That being set aside, I will move amendment number 11.
I will object for purpose of explanation.
Mr. Schilling.
Madam Chair, for the record, Jordan Schilling, staff to Senator Coghill. Amendment 11 is X.10. This excludes misdemeanors from the early discharge policy. The commission recommended that if an individual were to successfully complete a year's worth of probation without any violations and in full compliance with their conditions, that be discharged early, or rather that a recommendation be made to the court that they be discharged early. And the Senate Finance Committee adopted an amendment similar to this because there was some thought that because a misdemeanant is not actively supervised by the Department of Corrections and does not have a probation or parole officer, that it would be sort of difficult to ensure that they have truly been in compliance with their conditions. Therefore, this policy should not apply to misdemeanants.
You know, let's set this one aside, too.
Madam Chair, if I could have just a moment on that.
Yes.
Part of the reason for this is that this really relates to parole supervision and not probation supervision, this amendment. And, in fact, people in a misdemeanor sentence are never put on parole. So the idea of release from parole for people that are convicted of a misdemeanor because their sentence is limited to a year, so they really can't have more than a year. They can't have more than a year left, which is why they're never on parole supervision. This amendment just recognizes the fact that people on misdemeanors are never on parole supervision, so they can't. There's nothing to release them from, and so it makes it much more of a technical correction on kind of the reality of people that are serving misdemeanor sentences, and it really doesn't rise to a policy call, at least from my perspective.
With that explanation, Madam Chair, I'll remove my objection if you want to.
Yes. All right. With any other comments on this, then amendment number 11 is adopted. Next is amendment number 12. I will move amendment number 12.
And then I'll object for purposes of explanation.
Mr. Schilling.
Madam Chair, for the record, Jordan Schilling, staff to Senator Coghill. Amendment number 12 is X.11. This amendment mirrors an amendment adopted by the Senate Finance Committee that requires the Department of Corrections to partner with nonprofit organizations, allowing them access to inmates that are near reentering into society to assist them in applying for public assistance and various other benefits, including assistance in getting state ID or a driver's license. And again, this is in an effort to improve their transition into the community.
Madam Chair, I'll remove my objection.
Hearing no other objections, amendment number 12 is adopted. Amendment number 13. I will move amendment number 13.
Let's jump. I'll object for purposes of explanation.
Madam Chair, for the record, Jordan Schilling, staff to Senator Coghill. Amendment number 13 is X-12. This mirrors an amendment adopted by the Senate Finance Committee in an effort to fund some of the reinvestment priorities of the commission. This amendment also is similar in nature to what the state what statute does with the alcohol tax revenue. In statute, 50% of alcohol tax revenue can be used for alcohol treatment. This simply says 50% of marijuana tax revenue can be used for recidivism reduction programs. This is not a dedicated fund. In the fiscal notes, I believe, Madam Chair, one can see that $3 million in FY17 is expected to be collected for the purposes of this fund and will be used to fund victim services, violence prevention through CDVSA, through reentry and substance abuse treatment through the Department of Health and Social Services, and pretrial supervision through the Department of Corrections.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, I'll remove my objection.
Okay. With that objection being removed, amendment number 13 is adopted. Go to amendment number 14.
I move amendment number 14, Madam Chair.
And I will object for purposes of discussion.
This amendment is motivated by discussion, especially in, most recently with minimums associated with murder in the second degree, about what associated minimums for various sex crimes were and how some sex crimes had more stringent and harsh and severe minimums than murder in some cases. And so given the complexity of this issue, rather than wade into it ourselves this year, which I think was probably a wise thing not to do, ask the Criminal Justice Commission if they could direct some of their attention to this issue. And that's what this amendment does.
Madam Chair.
Representative Mellett.
Thank you. And this is either for Wes, or Representative Keller, or Jordan. What is the status of the commission? Did they have a working group already on this? And was this one of their?
I'm gonna, I'll throw out a lifeline for anybody that wants to help respond to that. But my recollection and my understanding is not specifically. This was not. It was a matter of concern, discussion, but it hasn't been targeted in the past. I think it probably is in the future. But I see Quinlan there. Did if maybe he could tell me if his memory either conflicts or will confirm that.
My name is Quinlan Steiner, public defender for the state of Alaska. I was also a member of the Criminal Justice Commission. My recollection was that we discussed weighing into this area, but decided on the limited suggestions that were in the recommendations. As a commissioner, I do think the commission would welcome the opportunity to sort of look at this area as a whole, but we didn't specifically not want to look at it. We just took, I think, the minimum steps that we recommended that everyone agreed with that would provide a positive reduction in recidivism, but I think taking a look at the whole thing would be appropriate.
Madam Chair, I think that confirms that my memory is, you know, parallel with his, and personally, my own perspective is I welcome this amendment. You know, I think it may direct us to look at policy that we really need to look at. So,
and Madam Chair,
Representative Mellett,
my question, and if we can do a conceptual amendment, I would like to direct OVR to participate in this. Since they do work for the legislature, I'd like them to be a participant in this working group. I think it's important that victims' voices have a part in this and that they might be able to bring some insight into this. So if we could, on the fly, do a conceptual amendment to add the Office of Victim Rights to participate in this program or in this working group.
Representative Keller?
I would not at all oppose that, but I just want to say, knowing the commission and having spent time on it, I know that door is always open and that it wouldn't be necessary, but if it gives comfort, there's no problem.
Thank you. And Madam Chair, I think it would give me comfort to know that we were telling them to go participate. I think that is important.
All right, then why don't you move?
I move conceptual amendment number 1 to amendment number 14 to add OVR to the working group.
And hearing no objection, conceptual amendment 1 to amendment 14 is adopted. So I will remove my objection to amendment number 14. So amendment number 14, as amended, is adopted. We now go to amendment number 15.
Madam Chair, I move amendment number 15.
And I will object for purposes of discussion.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This amendment deals with line of death benefits for peace officers in the PERS system. It's been a bill that we've been working on for almost 5 years, and what it would do basically is for those officers that are killed in the line of duty would offer retire insurance benefits in the retiree program for the families, the spouses, and the dependent children.
Questions or comments here? I will remove my objection to amendment number 15. So amendment number 15 is adopted. Next, we will go to amendment number 16. I move amendment number 16.
I'll object for purposes of explanation, Madam Chair.
Yes, Mr. Schilling. And I want to note that the bill's author, Senator Coghill, is here with us today. Welcome to House Judiciary, Senator Coghill.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, Jordan Schilling, staff to Senator Coghill. This amendment number 16, X20, is really a technical amendment to ensure that the reinvestment language that was previously in House Bill 205 mirrors exactly the reinvestment language in the CS to Senate Bill 91. For example, it requires that when determining whether a program is worthy, if you will, of funding, that that it's based on best research rather than simply peer-reviewed research. And again, this is really just a technical amendment to conform the language with the Senate version as it came over.
Thank you. Representative Mellett?
Thank you, Jordan. And on the limited license, is there a portion of this that applies to when a person leaves prison and they have they're under treatment, that they have a limited license with the red line through it? Did we make that amendment in this legislation?
Through the chair, Representative Millett, it's my understanding that provision is not in the CS, nor there is an amendment that addresses that. But that is a concept that I think has been talked about to ensure that when an individual is released from prison on the various types of parole, that there be, and if there is a condition that they not consume or possess alcohol, that there would be something on the ID or the license that would indicate that they are not able to do that.
I don't want to hold up this amendment, but Madam Chair, I think that we're lacking one amendment, and that would be that amendment that when folks that have alcohol provisions as part of their release, that they, when they do go get, because we're directing corrections in this bill to make sure that people have ID, and that was some amendments that we did in our bill. But one of the things that we didn't do was to make sure that when they do get issued their driver's license, if they can not consuming alcohol as part of their condition of their release, that there should be that standard. I think we have a ID already designed that does that, that would be the issue that they would get. They wouldn't get the driver's license that just, you know, so they can't go into a liquor store and buy alcohol or so, I mean, I don't know if I can try and draft it up, but it would hold up the bill.
Why don't you draft something up, Representative Millett, and after we've passed the bill out, this bill has one more stop on its way to where it's going.
Okay, sounds good.
I will withdraw.
I actually have a question for Jordan.
Go ahead, Representative Klayman.
I'm just looking at Amendment 16. We're taking out the provisions involving helping somebody getting out of prison learn where they might have access to medical care, and only reference to counseling. Was there a reason to take medical care out? I know the earlier amendment number 12, has provisions about working with a nonprofit to make sure the prisoner knows how to basically apply for different medical benefits, but is there a reason for taking medical care out here in Amendment 16?
Representative Klayman, through the chair, you know, it's a policy call, I think, of this committee. It certainly could be conceptually amended. The recidivism reduction program can fund various types of programs, and there is medical care that can be provided through this fund, for example, drug and alcohol treatment, mental health treatment, cognitive behavioral programs, and of course, as you mentioned, nonprofits now would be able to assist individuals in applying for medical care, but this is really a policy call, I would say, of this committee.
Just as a follow-up that may resolve my this is actually not giving them guidance to where they find medical care. This would actually be a program that would provide medical care. So by removing medical care, we're saying this particular program won't provide medical care, but there's other provisions in the bill that give direction as they're leaving prison, that they're given knowledge about where resources are in the community to get medical care.
Okay. I think I'm going to set this one aside and look at this one a little bit further. So we're now going to amendment number 17, and I will move amendment number 17.
I'll object for purposes of explanation.
Mr. Schilling.
Madam Chair, for the record, Jordan Schilling, staff to Senator Coghill. There are provisions in the bill that provide for a felony limited license. Currently, the state has misdemeanor limited licenses. Senator Coghill has worked for several sessions to get a provision like this in place, and it's in Senate Bill 91. However, there were some technical changes, some cleanup language that was required to make the license work for both the courts and the DMV. So I view this largely as a technical amendment, though I would defer to Nancy Mead, if she's still in the room, on specifics if the committee wants to go into that.
Sounds good. Thank you. Ms. Mead.
Good morning. For the record, Nancy Mead, General Counsel for the Alaska Court System. I did work with the sponsor's office and your staff just to ensure that this would be something that could work and be in keeping with their intent, the intent being to allow certain people with felony DUIs, after which a person's driver's license is revoked permanently, to have a limited license for a time period and thereafter have their license restored if they do, if they drive successfully under that limited license. And this is, the court is neutral on this, but I did help draft or make some suggestions to make it workable in keeping with their intent. So the version that's in the bill before the amendment was quite complicated for individuals to try to get that limited license. They had to make several stops along the way. As Mr. Schilling explained, the amendments in Section 17 would fix some technical things. For example, it said the person has to have completed therapeutic court or have done it for 6 months. Well, the 6 months was intended to be if you're in therapeutic court for at least 6 months of the entire time period, you can get it then too. So those are the types of amendments that were made. The Department of Motor Vehicles, who will be giving these limited licenses, wanted to ensure that they received verification from the individual who's applying for it that they actually did go through therapeutic court. That would be the third entry on amendment number 17. The provisions that were in 91 or are currently before you adopt the amendment are quite difficult for a person to meet, honestly. They have to have gone through therapeutic court. They have to buy the insurance that's required to drive after having a DUI on their record. And almost by definition, this would be their third DUI because they're in felony land. They have to get the ignition interlock device. And so they have to go through a lot of things that I think insured the people working on this, that there would be some public safety would be accounted for. The amendment removes the 24/7 requirement because people thought that would be duplicative of the ignition interlock requirement for those people. After the people drive on the limited license for 3 years, they can go back to the Department of Motor Vehicles and submit proof that they've complied with the six items basically on the checklist and receive their license back fully restored. This also gets rid of, for example, the requirement that the person go through ASAP because, as I've previously testified, these are felons, and felons don't work in the ASAP program. So as Mr. Schilling said, you could view these as somewhat technical. And the last time we talked about this, there were some wording changes that the committee thought ought to be made, and those seem to be made in this amendment. I'd be happy to answer any specific questions about it.
Do we have any specific questions for Ms. Mead?
Madam Chair, I'll remove my objection.
Hearing no further objections, thank you very much for your explanation. And we will finally go to amendment number 18. I move amendment number 18.
And I'll object for purposes of explanation.
Mr. Schilling.
Did we adopt 17?
Yes.
Madam Chair, for the record, Jordan Schilling, staff to Senator Coghill. This, like the last one, is a technical amendment that cleans up the applicability sections of the bill. This is Amendment 18X22. This is one that I believe came in last night or early this morning. I'd probably defer to either the Department of Law or the Public Defender to go through the five applicability changes. But one that I could point out specifically to the committee on page 2 of the amendment, this relates to the food stamps provision in the bill that would opt Alaska out of the prohibition on food stamps going to felony drug offenders. This would make that provision of the bill retroactive to apply to current drug felons.
Thank you. So you had suggested that Mr. Steiner and the Department of Law comment on this also?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Mr. Steiner.
Thank you.
or Ms. Wallenberg?
Madam Chair, Tracy Wallenberg again from the Public Defender Agency. I apologize, I'm just seeing this amendment for the first time.
I'll tell you what, Ms. Wallenberg. This is the last amendment. We have set four other amendments aside. I'm going to recess this meeting until the call of the chair, which will probably be in around an hour from now. So we are recessed, and we'll see you back at the call of... Pardon me? And there's food in my office. Back on record right now. We have reconvened. It is 10:12. At the moment, the members present are Representative Millett, Representative Lynn, Representative Foster, Representative Klayman, Vice Chair Keller, myself, Chair Ledoux, and Representative Chris Tompkins has just joined us. So again, I'd like to reiterate, please everybody turn off your cell phones. We are back on amendments.
Number three, I think.
Madam Chair.
Yeah, Representative Millett.
I'm not sure where we are on the movement, but I would move amendment number three.
And I'm going to object for purposes of discussion. And again, Jordan, why don't you join us here?
Actually, Madam Chair, I think I can explain where we are in amendment number three.
Okay, I'll let Representative Klayman do that.
Amendment number three in the House version, fourth degree assault was limited to 1 year probation except for cases involving domestic violence. And with amendment number three, the court will have the ability to put a person convicted of any assault for up to 2 years probation rather than the 1 year limit. So this gives the court more discretion depending, looking at the offender and the seriousness of the offense, to, in any assault case, to have up to 2 years probation.
Thank you. Any other comments about this? Representative Foster.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So you're saying it's not a mandatory 2 year, it's discretion up to 2 years?
Through the chair, that's correct.
Thanks.
All right. Representative Millett, I'm going to remove my objection to amendment number three. Seeing no further objections, amendment number three is adopted.
Madam Chair.
Representative Millett.
I move amendment number 10.
And again, I will object for purposes of discussion. Do you want to explain amendment number 10, or do you want to have Representative Klayman or Jordan explain?
Madam Chair. I think I can alleviate this one. It was my objection. I misunderstood, and as I read it through, it truly is a technical change in a really no substantive effort. So I, I don't know. I guess you just, so if nobody objected, I don't have any objection anyway. I'll remove mine.
All right. I will remove my objection, and amendment number 10 is adopted. We are not going to, amendment number 16, I am going to withdraw my motion on amendment number 16. We are now on amendment number 18.
You're going to withdraw the whole amendment, Madam
Yes.
Chair? Thank you.
Madam Chair, did we want to discuss it all, amendment 8? We would.
We'll get to amendment
okay.
8.
Sorry.
Amendment number 18, I'm going to. I believe I moved amendment number 18, and then we set it aside. I believe that we have Tracy Wallenberg.
Madam Chair.
Again, for the record, Tracy Wallenberg, Deputy Public Defender for the Appellate Division at the Public Defender Agency. As Mr. Schilling stated earlier, Amendment Number 18 is an applicability, an amendment to the applicability provisions, and it does five main things. As Mr. Schilling indicated previously, one of the things it does is it makes retroactive the provision dealing with eligibility for food stamps and temporary assistance, so that provision will apply to offenses committed before, on, or after the effective date. The second thing it does is it makes prospective the section increasing the maximum fine for maximum permissible fine for a Class A misdemeanor, increasing that to $25,000. That would apply to offenses committed on or after, consistent with the prohibition on ex post facto laws. The third thing, actually the third, fourth, and fifth impacts that this has all would make applicability apply to sentences imposed on or after the effective date for offenses occurring before, on, or after. And those three provisions are, first, the treatment provision in AS 1255027F, and that's the provision that further defined what a treatment program is. That provision, consistent with the other changes that were made to the pretrial credit for treatment provisions, all those provisions would apply to sentences imposed on or after. The earned good time credit for individuals convicted of sex offenses, that provision would also apply to sentences imposed on or after, as would the changes to the discretionary parole provision, so that at sentencing, all the parties and the victim are aware of what the possibilities were in terms of statutory good time credit and discretionary parole eligibility.
Thank you.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Representative Keller.
Previously, I had put my objection on here, and I'll remove it.
Any other objections? Hearing none, Amendment Number 18 is adopted. And so that leaves Amendment Number 8. I am going to withdraw my motion to move Amendment Number 8. So, with no further amendments, what is the pleasure of this committee?
Madam Chair, I move a version.
I believe Representative Mellett might have a motion.
Comment and a motion. Yeah. Madam Chair, I just want to first and foremost thank you for your leadership on both the House version and now as we pass the Senate version, and every member of this committee who has done just incredible, extraordinary work. I want to thank Jordan. I want to thank my staff, Grace, who has shepherded us through this process, your staff, Amy and Calissa, the patience that we have had. This is not an easy subject. I came in as a pessimist about this bill, but willing to give it a try. I am now convinced that we are going down the right path for criminal justice reform. The commission has done a great job, and the commissioners have done a really, really exceptional job of explaining the reasons and backed it with data. So I just want the public to know that there's been many changes that came to House Judiciary that were based on public testimony, that were based on people that had experience with the criminal justice system, people that had success, limited success, and future success that they hope for in the criminal justice system. I think as we move forward, it's a large fundamental shift in how we look at criminal justice, how we talk about recidivism, and how we talk about Alaskans as they enter into the criminal justice system and how they exit the criminal justice system. We do an incredible job of entering them into the criminal justice system, and we have failed a lot of them exiting the criminal justice system. And this bill, I believe, will change that that to better outcomes for Alaskans. I believe that this bill will make communities safer, although I know it comes with some resistance from folks that are victims' advocates, and I take that very heavily to heart, and I think about it on a daily basis. We've had some incredible folks come and testify to us that helped us shape this version of the bill, and I want to acknowledge them for their braveness and openness and willing to share their pain with us to make this piece of legislation better. The Duesenberries, the Moores, there's a lot of folks out there that came and poured their heart out to us, and I think this bill is a better bill because of it. So, Madam Chair, those are just my comments, and I want folks to know that it did not do, that this bill was not done without incredible work and incredible due diligence and trying to understand the criminal justice system as it stands now and what this shift will look like out into the future. So I appreciate every single member of this committee and everybody that's worked on this bill. Just a huge thank you. It hasn't been easy. It's been probably the most difficult piece of legislation I've ever worked on. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative
Kelly. I just want to say that Representative Millett deserves some comments here. Your hard work was obvious and appreciated in the work of your staff. And also, I had staff, Representative Ledoux had staff that put a lot of hours in this. It was very kind, but I just wanted to recognize that you are the sponsor of, or carrying our side of the work here, and you carried a lot. Thank you.
Representative Mann.
Yes, I'd like to make a couple of short comments. While I'm not a fan of this bill, I'm certainly a fan of how this entire hearing has been conducted. Congratulations to our chairman and vice chair and everybody else on the committee, and to the many people who've testified on this bill, and some of the personal stories that they've shared to help us come to our various decisions on this. So again, I'm very happy with how you conducted this this hearing.
Thank you, Representative Lynn. Representative Christ Tompkins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I mean, I would echo what the three previous members of the committee mentioned, and at risk of derailing the sort of freight train of good jujus, I would also like to call brief at ease to just to touch base on one issue with another member. Sure, yeah. This strikes me as the best functioning committee I've seen in the legislature, and one of the hardest pieces of legislation, just in terms of what strikes me as really sincere, emotionally and intellectually, engagement with the policy in front of us, and people working as people and not members of any caucus or part of the state or party, and that's how the legislature should work, and I wish every committee was like this, and the committee of the whole, for that matter.
Thank you, Representative Price-Tompkins. Representative Tiger?
I just want to say it's been a pleasure to be involved in this committee, and I thought we've worked very well together.
We're not finished yet.
I know we're not finished, but it's been a pleasure to work on this committee on this bill, and I think the work reflects a common commitment to what's best for Alaska, recognizing that what's been going on with corrections has been imperfect, and that's consistent with government. Government is imperfect, and part of our job is to help try to get government to do a better job. And so I'm pleased to be supporting this bill, and thank the chair as well as every member of the committee for all the work that we've done, in particular Representative Millett, for introducing a long and complex bill.
Thank you, Representative Kleinman. Representative Foster?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just also wanted to include in our many thanks the commission and all the hard work that they did. And I think it's a good bill. Let's pass it out.
It's always hard to be the last after everybody goes around and gives the compliments to everybody else. You're just sort of left with, well, who else is there to mention? I'd like to particularly thank my staff, which has been invaluable throughout this process. It's been great working with Representative Millett on this bill, with Representative Clayman, with just the entire committee. After Max's passing, it was like, well, how are we going to do this huge bill without Max? But somehow or other, we made it through it. and we did listen to public testimony. And we took much of that public testimony to heart. And so there were changes to this bill, significant changes to this bill, as the result of public testimony. And we've worked our best to get this right. Nothing's perfect in this world. Certainly nothing's perfect in the legislature. But we're trying not to let the perfect get in the way of the good. And I do think that this is a good bill. And I'm looking forward to passing it on to its next committee. So what is the pleasure of the committee?
Madam Chair, I would like to defer to the sponsor, if you would.
Thank you. Madam Chair, I move version 29-LS0514/X of House Committee Substitute for Sponsor Substitute for Senate Bill 91 from House Judiciary Committee as amended with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
Seeing no.
As amended?
As amended.
Seeing no objections, the bill will pass out of committee. Legal can make the necessary conforming and technical changes to incorporate the amendments. And with that, the bill is moved. Our next, and hopefully our final, but not necessarily our final, meeting is scheduled for today, Thursday, April 14th, at 1 p.m. We stand adjourned. It is 10:30, and please, everybody, stay around to sign the bill folder.